How ironic that typically we say, well, I just didn't have time to write a letter or call Aunt so-and-so. And yet, I know all about Madonna.
Interface. Not the same questions, not the same answers.
Hello, I'm Brad Johnson, and welcome to Interface, a weekly examination of Christian perspectives on theology, philosophy, ethics, and culture with Adam Ayers, the pastor of Disciples Church in Costa Mesa, California. Adam is also the founder of the Stoa Foundation. Today, we're honored to have in our studio with us our engineer, not just behind the board, but actually behind the microphone. Chris Holawati is joining us today. Before the show started today, we were sitting with Chris at the board, trying to figure out what we were going to talk about, and the topic came up of entertainment. And Chris had some perspectives on entertainment, and particularly entertainment as it figures into the life of a Christian.
Well, yeah, part of it came up because we were talking, or actually because I was surfing the net the other day and bumped into a couple of Christian music sites on the net and was just surprised to see how many new bands are out there that I've never even heard of, for one thing. But just kind of got to thinking about the whole role of entertainment in the Christian community and in my own life, how I see it, how I use it, how much I take it for granted, how much I never really give it a second thought. Entertainment's one of those things that living in LA and particularly working in the entertainment industry obviously is very much part of my life. And so I was kind of wondering, you know, how... just wondered, what would Jesus think about entertainment? How would he view how huge of a part it is in our lives right now? I mean, everybody has a TV. Everybody pretty much has the option to sit down and flip on a switch and watch shows where back in Jesus' day, I mean, you never saw them unless you went to the Colosseum or saw a Greek play or something like that. Even the prevalence of music in our society, walking to a grocery store and hearing it played over the speakers. I mean, it's just, there's something around, it seems like everywhere, to distract or occupy your mind, to entertain you.
You don't have to walk very far before getting your recommended daily allowance of entertainment.
Whatever that may be. And so I thought it'd be kind of interesting to talk about. What is a biblical perspective on entertainment? Does the scripture even deal with it, really, seeing as how it wasn't as prevalent back then? I just thought I'd throw that out there tonight.
It's a big topic. Yeah. Hearing you talk, part of what needs to be distinguished is that there is some entertainment which seems to be pleasure, which is that just general stimulation, the overall stimulation. And then there is some entertainment which seems to be crisis-oriented. See, it's one thing to listen to Chopin, you know, something that is art. Listen to art, you know, whoever art may be. And to have a sensory experience which is just simply pleasurable and enlivening. And there's another one that it comes with the identification of ourselves with different kinds of entertainment. Like you mentioned the Colosseum. In the Colosseum, there's the identification with certain kinds of either your team, maybe it's a hippodrome, maybe they're having horse races, chariot races, perhaps it's wrestling one of these things or your gladiator fights or whatever that might be, where you're identified with a crisis that's going on. There's another thing that is the art of aesthetics. I think these are two different forms of entertainment. You see, maybe we can start by trying to define what entertainment is and then what role that would play in human life. So when you think of entertainment, what is it that you actually think of, Chris?
Well, the way you're describing it is one is more like a sporting event. Like, we all here in LA maybe would root for the Lakers, and so it's our team out there, and so you begin to feel like you're part of it. But for me, when I think of entertainment, I do primarily think of a movie or listening to music or going to a show, those kinds of things. Not so much something where I feel part of it, except in the sense of being drawn into a story, perhaps, and having it enliven who I am or enlighten who I am, rather. That would be a different type of entertainment, I would think, where it would have a purpose as opposed to simply going to not think about other things for a while, mm-hmm. for lack of a better way of putting it.
Yeah, and I think that there are those two uses for entertainment. There's one which blocks out thought, and there's one which creates thought.
Exactly.
So there's one which is eliciting an existential reaction, and there's one which is blocking an existential reality. And we have to deal with both of those because sometimes, in a sense, think of it like pharmaceuticals. There are some which are stimulants, and there are some which are depressants. And these have different functions on your existence. And there are some which are hallucinogens, which would be like listening to Pink Floyd or something like that, you see. You know, and that break your perceptions as opposed to utilizing them. You see, and that's what we're really talking about. We're talking about the artistic experience here. And in many ways, what role does art and culture play in human life? I think as Christians, this is a huge issue because it would appear from the Gospels that Christ makes a large point of saying it is not necessarily that which is your outer experience which is your genuine experience, but that which is your inner experience, what takes place in your perceptions, in your will, in your heart, and in your mind, and that these are the places where either sin or righteousness take place. And Paul makes an interesting point in Romans 1, where he gives this list of all these sinful things and says, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which do such things are worthy of death, not only do them, but take pleasure in those who do them. So there is definitely an aspect of Christian existence which asks the question, what is it that makes you feel enlivened, and what is it in which you take pleasure? And that's a huge thing. Like, one of the things that comes to my mind in what we define as entertainment, for example, seeing persons in crisis. This might be emotional crisis. It might be fear. It might be family stress. It might be violence. But do we take pleasure in the brokenness of human existence? And is this entertaining for us? Is this enlivening for us? We really have to carefully address that. Watching the news, people say, well, you know, I don't do movies and I don't do violent stuff. I just watch the news. But what is it that one finds enlivening about news? You see, is it, ooh, wow, I get to see human beings in crisis. Is that enlivening for us? Are we gladiatorial in that?
Or watching a boxing match.
Mm-hmm.
Or watching a particular sport that is somewhat more violent than others.
Mm-hmm.
And hockey games.
Mm-hmm.
What do I like about hockey games? Like the fact that I get to normally see a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly.
Yeah, I went to the fights and a hockey game broke
right,
out.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that is a valid question of asking, what is it about that which entertains me that I enjoy? What aspect of it? I don't normally go to movies in order to be educated or to learn something new about who I am as a human being. Sometimes it happens, but that's not normally my conscious goal of going or my reason for wanting to be entertained. I think for me, part of why this topic comes up is I don't like the reasons why I like to be entertained. And there's part of me that realizes that most of the time, entertainment serves as a pharmaceutical, you know, as opposed to something that is enlivening. It is really something actually that is distracting for me. I don't have to deal with myself or deal with the world around me, and so let me escape for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't strike me. I think that's part of why I've been working through this and going, you know, I don't like that about myself. Don't really like what that does to me. And I wonder, how aware are most people of that?
Mm-hmm.
When you sit down and decide what movie you're going to go see, or when you sit down to think about what song you're going to listen to, or what station you're going to listen to, or what, you know, what talk show do you want to listen to?
Mm-hmm.
What are they talking about on that show, and why is that entertaining? The thought that crosses my mind is usually not, is this going to enliven me, or is this, to use a Christian word, edifying? You know, is this does this bring me closer to the Lord? I just don't want to have to think right now.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things that sheds light on, oh, we're going to get in trouble on this one. Why do we, it brings up the issue, why do we as Christians oppose drug abuse? Typically, our rationale runs on these lines, aside from legalities. It is mood altering and it is a substitute for the presence of God. Like I think about Paul where he says, be not drunk with wine wherein is dissipation. This idea of the diffusion of the human spirit into these spirits, you see, you know, alcoholic spirits and that,
mm-hmm.
and that it diffuses our human existence rather than focusing it and being enlivened by the Lord. We, you know, when I'm down in the dumps, I go shopping might be a mood-altering experience too. So we have to say, well, we oppose the use of chemicals to mood-alter human beings. and to block out reality and to be irresponsible. And yet, say, shopping can be the same thing, or going to movies can be the same thing. Why is it that when we are lonely, we go to see a movie? Why is it that when we are depressed, we throw on a CD? Is this not a mood-altering experience? And have we not paid money, and are we not often addicted to it? Those are the kinds of questions that must come to mind, because oftentimes people will spend time with their television set before they will spend time with their kids. Now, you're telling me that if somebody drinks booze and is addicted to that, it's destructive and evil because it takes time away from their families and from their walks with God, and it's dissipating and it's mood altering and it's habit forming. And yet we don't use the same with television or entertainment or whatever it might be.
I think we don't realize it until you try to take a week off of it.
Yes.
Just try to spend a week without watching any TV or reading a newspaper or listening to the radio or putting on any music at all.
Except for Interface.
Of course.
You can still listen to Interface.
Because we are edifying.
We are edifying. I think sometimes we're edifying, but you know. Yeah, if you try to cut it out,
then you realize how significant it is in your life.
However, the pharmaceuticals may have a little bit more debilitating effect and perhaps in the long term, and especially the combination of pharmaceuticals and entertainment.
Yes.
Yeah. But one thing you just brought up, which I was just thinking about, the whole idea of don't spend your time in something that is diffusing, dissipating. Can you clarify on that?
Yeah. For example, going back to the TV and family thing, one of the things that I note about entertainment, what is it that draws us in, say, to a movie? Or a sporting event. What is it that draws you in? You feel an identification with a character. Identification is that sense of camaraderie or association that we have with characters which are similar to us. When we feel an affinity for someone like that, we become involved and we live their crises or their lives alongside of them, so to speak.
Vicariously
on their side, you see. And we view things from their perspectives. Now think for a moment how many TV characters we identify with in just a week, or movie characters. How many characters have you identified with in the last year?
And in subjecting yourself to identifying with them, you're subjecting yourself to emotional manipulation.
Yes.
On a regular basis.
Yes. But
like, a large number, yeah.
A large number. Say, you keep up on how many shows with how many characters, you know all the aspects of their lives, you know what relationships they're having, what crises in those relationships, all this kinds of stuff. Now think for a moment, how many friends do you have? How many relationships do you have? Real human relationships. Not with synthetic characters, not with cardboard cutouts, but with real human beings. How ironic that typically we say, well, I just didn't have time to write a letter or call Aunt so-and-so, and yet I know all about Madonna. I don't know my next door neighbor, but I know the lives of 150 television characters, and I keep up on them. What if we kept up on each other with that kind of interest? And we said, I am concerned. For example, Scripture says, weep with those that weep. Well, we don't have the emotional, existential, relational energy to weep with those who weep. Why? Because we've been weeping with false characters who aren't human beings in our entertainment. We cry at movies for
right.
persons who don't exist. And then we don't have enough energy to love our neighbor. It's dissipating. See?
So is there room then in our lives for movies and television and things like that?
Well, I think, and of course we're looking at a biblical position. The Bible doesn't address that because it wasn't, for example, no one in ancient times ever got to listen to music by themselves. All entertainments were relational in some sense. And some persons have posited that Job is the earliest Hebrew drama, which is kind of interesting. But in those days, there's at least a human presence there, no matter what event. Now we have a situation where we have completely synthetic events. We can listen to music without anyone being there. No one before the century ever listened to music by themselves, within the last 150 years or whatever. Nobody listened to music by themselves. There was always a human being there. And I think there is a place for entertainment in our lives in that it can reveal to us the human state. That's true. And in doing so, increase our compassion for the human state. In the same way, there is a place, obviously, in Scripture for wine. And yet Paul says, don't be drunk with it in a way that it brings dissipation. in the same way, I think that there is a place for Christian entertainment or entertainment for the Christian, yet not in a way that brings a dissipation to us, that depletes us of our human interrelationships. And I think this is something we need to monitor very, very carefully. Additionally, I think one of the liabilities of entertainment, what is it that we find so engaging in these movies? Say in an hour and a half movie, what do you see?
Part of it is just the emotions that get wrapped up into it. It's just really nice to be able to sit down and be carried away by an experience. Mm-hmm. To have your mood altered to, I'm trying to think of the latest movie I saw and how it brought on emotions of sympathizing with the characters in the sense of you find yourself hoping for them. You find yourself getting really wrapped up in it. You experience a different life for a while. You experience sorrow or you experience elation when it works out or whatever. And it does draw you in. And yet it's a completely false experience, but it's kind of nice to have.
Mm-hmm. Now, in those experiences, are those experiences similar to ordinary human experience, either as in real-time experience or real sensory experience? For example, when we fall in love, does music come on?
No.
No.
Well, it did for me, but...
Yeah, that's true. For those of you who don't know, Mr. Hollywoddy met his bride over the internet, which is just proves that that can work.
Yeah.
That can work. Yeah, it can work out. But and greetings to your wife out there. But these sorts of experiences are not real time. They are not the nature of human... They are condensed. They're concentrated experiences. Either we see, say, an action film. What? You know, 100 life-threatening crises in an hour and a half? Okay, if you really went through that, you'd be a basket case by the end, you see? Or in romance, you have an entire season of relationship compressed into an hour and a half and then cinematographically enhanced, aurally enhanced by music so that, in effect, what you get is a heightened experience of human existence. The problem is when we saturate ourselves with concentrated, heightened human existence, that begins to appear and feel to be the norm. And so we walk away from a movie, the rest of our reality seems flat. In that way, it diffuses our investment in our ordinary reality. In a sense, it's like snorting cocaine. It gives you a heightened experience. But because of that heightened experience, the rest of life seems pallid.
Yeah, seems boring.
Yes. So what do you have to do?
You got to keep maintaining the heightened experience.
Exactly.
Reminds me of a story a friend of mine in college told me about when he was growing up. He was about 12 years old and was out ice fishing with his dad. Mm-hmm. And the ice broke and his dad fell into the lake. And he was just stood there, just shocked. And his dad scrambling to try to get himself out of the water and trying to get back on the ice and couldn't and was struggling and struggling. And the kid my friend just stood there, just stunned. And it wasn't until his dad just yelled at him, said, move, do something, that he finally started moving and went and got some help, got some rope and was able to help. And his dad was fine. And his dad came back in the house, took the TV mm-hmm. and threw it away. Mm-hmm. Because he reasoned that the only place my son has learned to watch a life-threatening event and not move.
Hmm.
It's got to be on a television set.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about that a lot. I thought about Neil Postman's book, you know, Amusing Ourselves to Death. And he talks a lot about the role of news and the media and how you learn about catastrophes everywhere, but you have no outlet to do anything and how that breeds apathy.
Mm-hmm.
And how in being aware is not necessarily a good thing. All it does is just, okay, you're aware, so what? And I think one of the early criticisms of the Telegraph was, great, I know what the Queen's hairdresser is doing, you know, mm-hmm. here in Tennessee, so what? I guess part of the thing about what you bring up in viewing and experiencing things, either in a heightened way or in a way that doesn't move you in any way physically to do something or to respond to or to be able to act to, breeds some really negative things, such as an expectancy for life to be the way it is in the movies. Or a sense of apathy of going, I can watch a dozen news stories about all kinds of tragedies, but I won't write to one single person whose experiences I've just watched to let them know, hey, I saw what happened and I'm praying for you.
Mm-hmm. Because we learn, really, not to weep with those who weep and not to rejoice with those who rejoice. Because if we wept with every character in crisis and, you know, in a true existential identification, we would be crushed under it, you see. And so when it does come time to genuinely relate to other human beings, we're handicapped. We have conditioned ourselves really not to feel, not to become associated. And we've tired ourselves out. We've been running existential races, sprints, and not to mention the impact that this has on our worship experiences.
Right.
Because now, I mean, think about the similarity between coming to church and going to a movie theater. You walk in. Now, sometimes this is organized, sometimes it's not to be similar, but that's a topic for another show. But you walk in, there's ushers that see you to your seat, you sit down. When the time comes, you know, the lights go off, the band comes on, or whatever it might be, and we are conditioned to now begin responding in a way that says, all right, make my life incredibly enlivened for the next hour. And in a sense, we say, my worship experience, my time at church, my time that should be with God, is going to be one where I'm seeking to be in a heightened sense of stimulation. And we consider it not to be very valid unless that happens. Either cognitive stimulation, where I have to be overwhelmed with data and think that this is really a deep experience. When is it okay simply to worship God? Because that's what we do as human beings. We just come, we worship God. It doesn't have to be life transforming. It doesn't have to be deep. It doesn't have to be entertaining. Right. It can simply be, I am here because I worship. That's all. I'm here to worship God. And nothing has to happen except I came, I worshiped.
We're almost out of time, but you bring up one thing, and maybe we can continue this next week. In dealing with that, I remember as a worship leader, I get compared to other people in my church who lead worship quite often. Either, gosh, I love it when you lead worship. It's just different, you know, and I remember one time it was a midweek Bible study, and I remember the week before I was at the worship service, and the guy leading the worship had a tough time of it, had a tough time with rhythm, had a tough time singing. I know the feeling of being up there and just struggling, just not being able to pull it together as a guitar player or whatever. And then I led worship the next week, and it went pretty well, and people made comparisons like, wow, I really thought the Spirit was there when you were leading. And I was like, so the Spirit is dependent upon rhythm and meter and singing in tune. And I just wondered how much of it was my worship depends on the quality of the music, the quality as it is. It the, you know, and I had to ask, is it the quality of the entertainment or is it really the Spirit of God moving in you? It becomes very, very difficult to distinguish.
And it very clearly illustrates the idea of polarity, of directionality. Are you coming to be stimulated? Because entertainment, you are, in a sense, passive and the receiver. I didn't get much out of it. That's the idea of entertainment. I wasn't enlivened and I didn't feel like I had a hyper-normal human existential experience. Or did you come to give? Because the biblical concept of worship is you come to give. Now, it would be very ironic to go to give a gift to somebody and then say, you know, I didn't get much out of that. Of course not. The idea was that you were giving. You see? So this impacts our understanding of worship and our experience of it.
Well, we have run into the constraints of time once again. That's all that we have time for today. Maybe we can pick up the same thread of thought next week. In the meantime, Chris, thank you very much for being in the studio with us today, and thank you for engineering the show. We'd like to thank Media City Sound for helping to make Interface possible, and thanks to you for listening.